I think that we'll have AI systems that can really help us to do scientific research, to address poverty, inequality. But at the same time, I think that we'll face a lot of challenges.
Welcome back to Ask More of AI, the podcast at the intersection of AI and business. I'm Clara Shai, CEO of Salesforce AI, and I'm so excited to be here this week at Trailblazer DX with our amazing developers and admins. I'm about to have a conversation with Jared Kaplan, co-founder and chief scientist of Anthropic. Fun fact, Jared and I went to high school together in Illinois and also college together at Stanford. Tell us more about the release of Claude 3. That is all over the news. What drove this launch? How long had you been working on these new models? And what sets these new models apart?
Yeah, so we've been working on them pretty intensively, really since Claude 2. It's sort of the natural outgrowth. We think that these systems are going to be able to be made sort of more honest, more reliable. We're going to be able to decrease hallucinations, make them more useful. So it's really been an ongoing process. And I guess what's most exciting is that we've been able to bring kind of multimodal performance and tool use to Claude so that there are so many different ways that you can make Claude productive for business.
Let's talk more about trust. Anthropic is an AI safety and research company. And again, you mentioned constitutional AI. For those who haven't heard of that before, what exactly is constitutional AI? How does it work? And why should people trust it?
Yeah, so it's a good question. And I mean, all of these research ideas are works in progress. But constitutional AI accomplishes a few things. It allows us to transparently articulate a set of principles guiding Claude's behavior, and then use AI itself to train our systems, Claude, to abide by those principles. So the idea is that we, instead of necessarily having lots and lots of human labelers labeling data in order to train our AI systems, we can have Claude effectively supervise itself to abide by this list of principles. And so it allows for transparency. It allows us to iterate really, really fast, because instead of having to go out and find or ask people to label data, we can use our own systems overnight to try out new constitutions, to update Claude, and really sort of do research at the pace that AI is developing.
Isn't there kind of an inception problem, though, because you have to trust that initial supervisor of itself?
Absolutely. No, this is a really great question. And this is why we also need people to interact with and evaluate Claude in order to ensure that it's safe. So part of the training process, of course, is constitutional AI, but we test these systems very thoroughly with red teamers and all kinds of different categories to ensure that we're actually hitting the benchmarks that we want.
Can you share examples of Anthropic success with enterprise customers?
Yeah, so I mean, I can just give a few. We work very closely with GitLab on coding. We've worked with Pfizer using Claude models for all sorts of medical drug discovery type use cases. We worked with LexisNexis on legal AI. So it's really exciting how many different domains, how general, in other words, Claude is. And so it's really fun sort of seeing how all of these different companies are able to deploy Claude.
And are these companies deploying Claude as is, or are they fine-tuning a version?
That's a great question. So there are a couple of different layers that you can use to customize Claude. I think the first layer and the first line of defense is really prompting and providing Claude in context with the data that's relevant to your use case. And I think that allows a great level of flexibility. It's really easy to get started. And I think it's surprisingly powerful. Now, a lot of customers come to us and they have really great data. They want to fine-tune Claude on their data. And that is possible. But I always sort of encourage people to think about what is the goal they're trying to accomplish with AI before they turn to fine tuning. Because in many cases, you can accomplish really, really valuable goals without sort of the back and forth, the complexity of fine tuning. But I think that often you can really go farther than you might expect without taking that step.
I couldn't agree more. We're seeing the same thing. And I mean, hence all this discussion about RAG and our data cloud. And you know, fine, for the last 10% final mile, you can fine tune if you have the resources. Such an interesting perspective. So you're serving consumers and you're serving enterprises. Are there differences you see in how to make each successful?
Yeah. So I mean, I think that at our core, I think we're mostly focused on enterprise. However, we think that it's important for anyone at any company to be able to engage with Claude and see what's possible. So for us, it's important to provide Claude to consumers and really to anyone at claude.ai, just so that they can get started, so that they can experiment. But we're a bit more focused on enterprise use. And I think that the enterprise case, I think sort of the safety message, reliability really, really resonates.
Now, a mutual partner of both of ours that I'm going to be interviewing this afternoon is Amazon. So can you talk about the options for deploying Anthropic models through Amazon Bedrock and how that differs from other ways of consuming Anthropic?
Yeah, I mean, we've really tried to keep Bedrock as much as possible at parity with our own first-party API. We want customers to be able to use Claude on AWS in exactly the same way they could if they were working with us. So really all of the Claude models, I mean, Claude 3 Sonnet is available now on Bedrock, and very, very soon, Claude 3 Opus and Haiku will also be available there. And so you should be able to sort of deploy Claude in whatever way is best for your business.
Yeah, we love giving customers choice, which models and how. Anthropic is also a big customer of both Salesforce and Slack. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I mean, I can talk more about Slack probably. For Salesforce, our sales team was ecstatic once they got access to Salesforce. But of course, I'm a research leader, so I'm not using Salesforce as much. For Slack, though, honestly, this is really very genuine. Like, coming from academia, I think using Slack has been very transformative for sort of medium to large research teams. Our research teams are very demanding that, say, they're allowed to retain all of their content on Slack because they have so many research discussions in Slack threads and Slack channels, and it really allows people to have an idea, suggest it to their colleagues at any time of the day, share data, share plots, share discussion, and that's really how a lot of our research productivity happens.
What do you expect models to get much better at in the coming year versus 2 years versus 5 years?
It's hard to answer some of these questions without sounding crazy. I think about the capabilities of AI systems on kind of two axes. So back when I think we were in high school maybe, like Deep Blue came out, and it was better than human beings at chess, but it's a very, very restrictive task. Playing chess is not all that valuable.
It's not AGI.
It's not AGI. So one axis is kind of like, what is the generality of the environment that an AI system can operate in? And so we went from Deep Blue and AlphaGo, which were very restrictive but powerful, to large language models, which you can interact with in any kind of textual situation. Obviously, very quickly added coding, and now sort of multimodal capabilities where you have systems that can understand images, and with Claude 3, I mean, you can give Claude 3 many frames of a video and it can understand sort of the dynamics that are going on. So I think one direction that we're gonna see explode very quickly, I think, is use cases that take advantage of all of the different modalities to bring AI more flexibly and fluidly to anywhere that we do business. So I expect that just as Claude can follow instructions and do tasks purely in text, we'll soon have systems that can look at your computer screen as an image and tell mouse, keyboard, et cetera, what to do in order to utilize all the interfaces that are already available to people. So I think that's one direction. And I think probably following on that will be moving from research to deployment, cases where these systems can operate robotics and presumably start to enter sort of the real world. The other direction that I tend to think about is sort of the time horizon on which Claude can operate. So currently, you can ask Claude to write a short memo, you can ask Claude to read a document, maybe even a book, and summarize or answer questions. These are tasks that might take a person a few minutes, maybe an hour. But I think current systems, as they're deployed, tend to make mistakes. They're not necessarily good at making plans, and so it's not necessarily possible to use them to do tasks that might take you many hours or a day or a week, et cetera. But I kind of expect that there'll be further progress in sort of the capability, the robustness, the reliability of these models so that you can use them for tasks that are agentic, that involve taking many actions, getting it right, backtracking if they make mistakes, et cetera. And so I think those are the two directions that I see. I think progress on this is probably going to be very rapid. I think with respect to, say, robotics, I expect the next 2 or 3 years to look like the last year or two in terms of starting to see real-world deployments. And I'm not sure sort of when we will be able to deploy sort of these agentic AI systems safely, but I think it's probably coming sooner than we might expect.
What's standing in the way? What are the key building blocks that need to be created or perfected?
Yeah, so I think that one of the things that's been a lot of fun moving from theoretical physics to AI is just the pace of progress in AI is really rapid. I think we're really breaking new ground. It's not that we got smarter, but we found sort of a way of making research progress easy with scaling. And so I think that the main blocker is really safety and robustness and reliability. Claude 3 Opus can get maybe half of the questions right that a PhD expert in a particular domain might be tasked with in a PhD program. But the half that it gets wrong, it doesn't necessarily know how to fix its mistakes. And I think that kind of reliability is what we're working on and that what I expect is coming and currently is a blocker to these kinds of uses.
What does that mean for PhD students?
I mean, hopefully it means that we can be a lot more productive and engaged. I have friends who are still in theoretical physics who use models like Claude to brainstorm and get feedback on ideas, to generate code for experiments and simulations. And so hopefully like we can have a lot more fun and make progress in science more efficiently.
Can you describe the day-to-day of what it's like at Anthropic? I mean, are there, you know, a set number of experiments that are being run? How are the research teams organized? And how often do you check in? How do you know if you're making progress?
Yeah, so I think we really try to be very systematic and try to do kind of the simplest possible thing that might work, just because when things are moving so fast, you don't necessarily have to try a very esoteric idea to
Occam's razor.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's different from in physics, where I might spend 3 months, 6 months just banging my head against the wall trying to find a good idea. So, I mean, people are very flexibly, organically organized. I mean, there are people working on safety and evaluations for current and future models. There's our interpretability team that I think is very well known and which has really made tremendous progress in kind of reverse engineering how AI systems work.
Which is really important, right? Because I don't know if a lot of people know this, but we still don't exactly know how these large language models work. Even the world-leading AI researchers don't know. So you have a team focused on figuring this out.
Exactly. So they're focused on trying to understand internally what are the neurons inside these neural networks actually mean? How can we decode that? And then how can we turn that into full circuits that you might think of as analogous to little computer programs that govern how these systems work? So that's a huge focus. We hope that we'll be able to bring what we learn from interpretability to make AI systems easier to monitor, safer, and better to understand. But absolutely what you said is 100% correct. this field is moving so quickly that even though these systems are very powerful, we don't have a deep understanding of how they work. It's nothing like physics or biology where people have been working on the field for decades, hundreds of years. And that's why, that's sort of the common sense reason why Anthropic worries a bit about safety, why we think caution is important, because it's all so new and it's all moving so quickly.
Is it kind of like quantum mechanics?
I think it's all, in a certain sense, simpler and newer than quantum mechanics. I mean, quantum mechanics was built on this edifice of classical mechanics, electromagnetism, all of these really deep insights that preceded it. AI, of course, is built on information theory, computer science, optimization, all kinds of things like that. But I think it feels, at least, it feels maybe as revolutionary as quantum mechanics, but it's all, I mean, quantum mechanics from, say, Planck in 1905 to quantum field theory, Feynman in the 60s and 70s, it was occurring over decades. And this is all, it feels like it's happening just over the last few years. And a few years from now, I think it'll be very different.
I think the stochastic element, too. I mean, there's a little bit of a parallel there.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Tell me more. Yeah, like.
I mean, you don't know for sure, right? It's probabilistic.
Absolutely, yeah, 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 absolutely, yeah. Yeah, people ask me about creativity in AI, like, can Claude be creative? And I mean, it's like, it's a complicated question, but exactly the stochastic nature means that you can generate sort of new ideas and new insights.
So you and I benefited from this amazing public school education. IMSA is a public math and science magnet boarding school. I asked you about PhDs earlier. What do you think about K-12 education? I mean, we both have young kids. How are you thinking about educating your children, and how should we think about educating the next generation to succeed in this AI era?
One thing that I think we're working on is to make AI systems that are sufficiently safe that we could use them as tutors. I mean, that's something that, like, internally at Anthropic, we often enjoy. Like, you can ask Claude to teach you a new language or a new idea. So I think that AI systems can probably help a lot with education. But I do think there's sort of a question of, just as with, like, a calculator, it makes it less important to learn arithmetic, what exactly are the skills that AI is sort of making redundant, and how can it help? I think that it really depends on how much progress we make and what's possible. I think if the progress we've seen is indicative of what's to come, then it could be very transformative, or there could be some sort of plateau, and then there'll still be a tremendous amount of work for people to basically use AI systems, but check them, ensure that they're robust, ensure that they're getting the right answers.
Which outcome do you think is going to happen?
I mean, obviously, I'm someone who had a career I enjoyed in physics, but I moved to AI, so I'm very optimistic about AI continuing to make more progress. But I try to maintain some sense of skepticism, just because expecting that the thing that you're working on is going to be the biggest thing ever is feels like almost everyone who's thought something like that in the past has been wrong, and so try to keep a sort of healthy skepticism.
I don't know. I mean, it's a good founder trait. So let's put aside that skepticism for just a moment, since we want this to be interesting and entertaining, right? No skepticism. What does that vision look like? Let's play it out 10 years. It's 2034. What does the world look like?
I mean, what does the world look like is really hard to answer, because it involves society, economics, governments, et cetera.
Let's start with the AI, the state of AI.
Yeah.
Do you think we will have achieved AGI by then? Again, no skepticism allowed in this particular conversation.
Well, I mean, if there's no skepticism, of course. I mean, I think that we'll have AI systems that can really help us to do scientific research, to address poverty, inequality. But at the same time, I think that we'll face a lot of challenges, because I think that humanity has been distinguished by our ability to cooperate, and obviously our intelligence. So if there are AI systems that can kind of do all of the cognitive work that we can do now, I think that that things will be very, very, very different.
So let's talk about that. So how would it do all the work? So would we still be sitting here? What would happen?
I mean, I think that Historically, the way that these things have happened has been that these systems enhance productivity, but we still are important for all sorts of different niche activities. So, I mean, cars displaced horses, but people are still relevant. I think that, well, I guess what I imagine is that individuals, in a positive direction, if this goes well, I think that individuals will just have a lot more ability to learn, spend their time in the way that that is most enriching and enjoyable for ourselves, and also build the things that like make our vision, make our dreams sort of come true. I think that's sort of the positive vision.
And I think that's a vision we share, and I think it's up to us, right? And that's why I'm really proud of the work that I think both of our companies have done to engage regulators and lawmakers and government leaders to not just envision the future, but to take the right steps to make it a reality. I think it's so important. You know, if we think about the next, just more of the immediate term, right, the next 12 months, what advice would you have for all of our trailblazers who are at this event and online in terms of how they can skill up and really take advantage of these new capabilities?
Yeah, I think maybe the most important advice is sort of dream big, in the sense that AI systems, I think, can do a lot now, but a lot of the things that don't quite work right now will work soon. So a lot of the thing, one of the major things I think about at Anthropic is if AI is going to move very quickly, how can we sort of deliver the most value, the most benefits, and keep pace with research? And so I think something I'm always telling people internally is that doesn't work now, but get it ready, because with the next system, it might work, and we should be prepared for that. And so I think that's sort of the advice I would give for anyone kind of developing using these AI systems is try really ambitious things. And even if they're not ready now, even if you can't deploy them, keep them in your back pocket and try them again when it's Claude 4, et cetera. So I think that's the main thing. And then I think a lot of these systems can perform even better if you kind of orchestrate them. So there are all sorts of simple use cases, like Claude is a chatbot and you can chat with it and ask it to do all kinds of work. But if you're willing to sort of orchestrate its behavior, have it generate many possibilities and then refine them, you can get even better performance. And that's, at least as a researcher, that's what I always love to see from customers, is sort of doing things that are really ambitious and kind of push the envelope.
I think both of us, when we were in high school, we wanted to be physicists. And we both interned at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory in Batavia, Illinois. And it wasn't surprising, our high school, the Illinois Math and Science Academy, was co-founded by Dr. Leon Lederman, the late Dr. Lederman, who was a Nobel Prize winner in physics and was very inspiring to a lot of us. But you carried this much, much further and longer than I did. You spent the first 15 years of your career as a theoretical physicist. You got your PhD in physics from Harvard after we went to Stanford together. Can you talk about the intersection of physics and machine learning and how you made the shift in the world to the world of AI?
Yeah, probably we were both excited about physics because of the potential impact it has on technology. And I mean, I was really into science fiction as a kid. I was sort of envisioning like what kind of impact could my career have on the human future. And so I pursued theoretical physics because I wanted to build warp drive and faster than light travel, like kind of like silly things like that. But I think I was always very mercurial, and so a couple of things happened. When I was in grad school, Dario Amodei, who's the CEO of Anthropic, and I like became friends, and we really hit it off because we're both excited about how technology could have kind of an impact to make the world a better place. And we stayed friends, and so I became a postdoc at Stanford and then a professor, but I spent a lot of time living in San Francisco. Dario and I actually lived together, and Dario was transitioning from cosmology to biology and bioinformatics and then to AI. And so we had a lot of conversations about how exciting AI was becoming, because sort of in the ancient days when I was in school, AI wasn't making as much progress as it is today. And so then I basically took an opportunity to go on sabbatical and study AI with a lot of other physicists. And because it's such a sort of rapidly moving and kind of new field, it wasn't that difficult to learn about it and start to get involved. And so back when OpenAI was a nonprofit, I actually volunteered there because Dario worked as the head of research at OpenAI. And I just started spending more and more of my time on AI research and kind of transitioning. And so then in 2021, when we founded Anthropic, I went on an extended leave from my job as a professor. And it's just sort of been AI for the last few years and probably into the future.
That's such a random and such a great story. I love that. So you've played a critical role in defining core concepts like scaling laws and reinforcement learning from human feedback, right? Everybody loves RLHF. What's it been like to be a part of these formative milestones from industry? And again, are there parallels to the academic world and physics that you draw from?
It's just been a tremendous opportunity. I think I've been really lucky to be kind of in the right place at the right time and maybe asking the right questions. I think that the perspective that physicists, theoretical physicists take is one of kind of focusing on simplicity and generality. We want to know, like, what is the big picture? And so I think that helped a lot with kind of the development of this idea of scaling laws, because obviously, like, long before scaling laws, people were talking about big data. Obviously, sort of AI progress was going strong in part for that reason. And so sort of the questions that we asked were kind of like, how could you quantify that? Like, how much data, how large could models get, and what would that mean? How much computation could be used to train them? And so that's kind of, I think, the way that physics helped, was really just in kind of what questions do you ask?
Yeah, it's such a great point. Okay, let's shift to what's happening at Anthropic today. What are the goals shaping your work? Who are you building for? I think Anthropic is famous for having a healthy level of anxiety about AGI. How does that manifest in the day-to-day and how you lead?
Yeah, I think it really gives a lot of coherence to the organization. So in part because of ideas like scaling laws, since long before sort of Claude and ChatGPT, we believed that predictably, AI was going to get better and better, more and more capable, basically through large investments in compute, data, larger models. We were going to be able to make AI systems that could do things that were impossible a few years ago. And I think that kind of core vision that AI is going to get better very, very quickly, and therefore we have a serious responsibility to try to use it for the good and to make sure that these systems are safe, really kind of guides the organization. And that means that kind of, even though we're doing a lot of research, it's not like everyone is working on a lot of different projects that are incoherent. Everyone's kind of focused on that goal of how do we make AI as capable, as safe, and as useful as possible.
Well, Jared, thank you for all the groundbreaking ways that you're leading us in furthering humankind with your AI work and doing it in a really responsible way. So important. Please join me in thanking Jared. What an amazing conversation. Three takeaways for me. One, even the world's leading AI researchers don't exactly know how large language models work. They're trying to figure it out in a field called interpretability. Two, the pace of AI development is exponential. And so even something that doesn't work today, try it again in a month or two and maybe it'll work. It's just astonishing. Last but not least, Anthropic is leading the charge, working with a number of healthcare and pharma companies to really accelerate drug development and amazing breakthroughs in science. That's it for this week's episode of Ask More of AI. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts and follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter.